This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
We have allowed ourselves to become so disconnected and ignorant about something that is as intimate as the food that we eat.
Be prepared to grow your own for victory.
God said, I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to yean lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink foamed pullets, who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. So God made a farmer.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. My name is Harold Thornbrough, and I'm not joined today by Rachel, but I'm joined by Cannon Kirby, and we're going to talk about his homestead, but we're also going to talk about fishing today. Cannon, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You're a big fisherman. I see the pictures all the time on your Instagram and on Facebook and stuff. You're always posting these big old bass you're catching down there on the lake. And I want to hear a little bit more about that. Before we get into that though, you're a homesteader first, right? I mean, you've got a homestead there.
We do. Yes. We wanted to purchase property on a lake. It didn't have to be large acreage or anything like that. But where we live in Central Florida, it's hard to find lakefront property at a reasonable price. And so we looked outside the city. We started looking outside the city a little ways and came across this 12 acres. It was a 2-year-old home. On a lake, and it's a private lake. It's about 100 acres or so. There's three of us currently that live on it. There's one more that's moving in, building a house right now. Gets very little pressure on the lake, and was just kind of a dream come true scenario. We started homesteading. I was a little tentative of calling myself a homesteader, of course, but wanted to, do justice to the property and rather than just leaving it out there with nothing on it. And so I started searching for information on homesteading, and I actually came across your podcast. It was about 5 years ago, and started listening to Modern Homesteading Podcasts every time I was out mowing or working in the yard or anything, and got more and more comfortable with calling myself a homesteader.
Good. You're like, well, if this guy's doing it, I guess I can. He ain't doing as much as me. So,
no, it was great. You were a great inspiration, and started adding a little bit at a time. Started with chickens, like most people do.
Yeah.
And now we have we've got goats, Nigerian mm-hmm. dwarf goats, we milk those, and we have kids. We just actually, somebody picked up one this morning. And
I've seen the picture already on Instagram.
Somebody picked up two doelings yesterday. We're getting back to where we can just start milking. The kids have weaned off, and we make cheese and just drink it. It's delicious. So
it's awesome.
But we have cows that we raise for meat. We have New Zealand rabbits that we raise for meat. We have chickens, lots of chickens. We incubate them, and we raise the roosters for the pot and keep the egg layers for eggs. My son sells awesome. Those, and we give away a lot of them. We planted at the beginning, based on listening to your podcast, we planted early fruit trees. So we've got quite a few varieties out there. We lost a couple in the freeze. We had two freezes last year. We hadn't had freeze in about 3 or 4 years, and we had two right in a row. So I lost a couple of fruit trees. But
now, what part of Florida are you in?
We're in Central Florida. So we're actually in Alturas. I grew up in Lakeland, which is about 30 minutes away from here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Altares is right between Bartow and Lake Wales, 15 anyway.
So you're just able to grow a whole lot of stuff that I'm not able to grow up here, that's for sure, as far as trees go.
We are. Our garden, we've been doing a garden for years, but the goats, we've had a little hard time. We had a buck that was insistent on getting out. It's made it harder to grow a garden the last couple of years, but we just sold him off. We'll get some new blood in, but also just kind of calm down things, and hopefully we can get our fall garden in and a spring garden next spring. And
yeah, so you pretty much grow year round where you're as far as the garden goes then, right?
We do, yes.
Yeah, you probably grow certain things better in that late fall garden than you do in the spring garden, I'm sure. Absolutely. Like some of your leafy greens and things like that going into the winter time. Yeah.
It gets really, really hot here. I mean, yesterday I think the heat index was 107. About all we can grow in the summer is okra and black-eyed peas. Peppers will last for a little while, but even they start fading off.
Wow, they can't even handle it, huh? Yeah. Wow.
But yeah. We have honeybees also. I forgot to mention that.
Oh, yeah, great. Well, on those really hot days, I guess that's a good time. You can't do any gardening, you might as well go fishing, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, how did you just fall in love with fishing? I mean, it's just always been a big part of your life, or is it just something you got into after you moved on the lake, or what?
Yeah, so I don't remember a time where I wasn't fishing. My mom said I was fishing from the point I could walk. My dad was a big fisherman, and he used to take old poles and tie on strings and no hook, but a rubber worm, and I just run that back and forth through the water. That was fishing. Yeah. Mostly we've been in Central Lakeland, but for a stint there, my dad was working on Estera Island, which they call Fort Myers Beach now.
Okay.
It was way less developed than it is now back then. But I remember even in preschool, I mean, first thing in the morning, I'd wake up, I'd walk my brother, who's 4 years older than me, to the bus stop. I'd carry both of our fishing poles down to the dock, and I would fish all day long until he got out of school, and we'd come home with big stringers of whiting and things like that. My mom would cook them up for us. So as long as I can remember, I've been fishing.
You've always lived in Florida?
Always lived in Florida. Except for in college, I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was my high school years I spent in Tennessee, and the fishing down there was really good. We lived right next to a lake. It was just kind of down the hill from us, and you know, I was about 14. I was walking down there like every day and just hooking everything I could, and yeah, it was some good fishing down there. I'm the same way, fishing my whole life, and now I got a grandson and he loves fishing, and we go fishing all the time. So yeah, I love the fit. Yeah, I love that you grew up fishing, because it makes an impact on you for life. I mean, it's just memories that you'll have and skills that you'll develop, and it looks like you've developed a lot of skill. It looks like you do a lot of sport fishing though, not just fishing for the homestead as far as meat goes. You do some, I see you hooking some fish that you're probably putting back, aren't you?
Yeah. So on our lake and really anywhere else, anything over 2 pounds, I let go. Especially on our lake, we have an abundance of 1 pounders, 1 to 2 pounders. And so when we're harvesting fish to eat, that's what we're keeping, 1 to 2 pounders. Sure. Bigger than that goes back in. But yeah, the biggest one I've caught out there, and those kind of just come in between when we're catching the smaller ones. And when the
freezer's full, for the pictures, right?
That's right. When the freezer's full, we don't even keep the smaller ones. But but yeah, the biggest bass I've caught on there is 11 pounds, 7 ounces. And we've caught multiple over 10 and a slew, you know, to 9 pound range also. The guy I bought the house from caught a 15.7 out of there.
Wow, that's amazing.
I haven't seen one that size. And my neighbors caught 3 in the 13-pound range, but I'm still sitting at 11.7. My second one is 11.2.
Yeah, Florida's definitely a different environment for fish than here in Indiana. We don't catch them that big here, but we get some nice ones, but not like that. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're full of fish down here.
Yeah. So you do stock the freezers. You eat lots of fish. I mean, it's a big part of the meat supply for your homestead then.
Yeah. So those young bass are delicious, and we keep a lot of those. Another big way that I run trot lines for catfish. For recreational, you can only run 25 hooks at a time down here. But if you get your freshwater commercial license, which is still, if you're a resident, it's only $25, still covers your freshwater fishing license also. And you can run as many hooks as you want to, pretty much.
That's great.
I have a dinner box that we call that, and it's got about 60 hooks on it. That's the one I put out normally, but then when we've gone out on some of the big lakes, we'll drop 1,000 hooks out there sometimes, and you can stock up a lot of really good catfish that way.
Yeah. I mean, you can put, if you really wanted to, you put hundreds of pounds of fish, if you want enough freezers and things like that to keep them, and you could put a lot of meat in the freezer for sure.
Absolutely, we do. And we try not to take out too much or anything like that. But like I said, even on our lake, there's such an abundance of one pound that we really need to pull some of those out just to kind of manage the lake and make sure there's enough feed out there for the big bass too.
Yeah. Do you catch a lot of, do you do any pan fishing? I mean, do you catch the bluegill and the crappie and things like that too? Or
bluegill, crappie, speckled perch. We do, when the shell cracker are bedding in the pads, we'll go in there with just little cane poles and crickets or minnows.
Nice.
And catch a slew of those. And that's some of the best eating you can get.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was getting ready to say. I really prefer those. I mean, yeah, they're a lot smaller and whatnot, but boy, I tell you what, that's some good eating right there.
Yeah, the crappie is my favorite by far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You really want to catch them consistently out here. You got to go out at night with some spotlights.
Mm-hmm. And,
we catch them during the day all the time, just when we're bass fishing. If you want to catch a slew of them, we go out at night and do that.
Yeah. That's when I always have the best luck with them too. And you just get in a big mess of them all at once. Like you won't have nothing biting. And then once you get one, they just come in them schools and you'll start hooking them right and left. Yeah. I love that.
Exactly right. Yep.
So I guess I wanted to, when I'm thinking about other people maybe getting in, there's a lot of people who are just getting into homesteading. I mean, it's just becoming a movement that's just, it's growing every day. There's a lot of things affecting that. I mean, they just look at the world we live in. They're like, okay, I want to have some of my own food, maybe for financial reasons, maybe just for security reasons, maybe for health reasons. There's a lot of reasons people are wanting to have their own food, and maybe they're new to fishing. Maybe it's something they've never done before or whatever. What kind of, like somebody's just getting started, what do you think they might need to really get going in fishing? I mean, you've got the boat, you've got all the fancy equipment, you got everything. What does that new person need?
Yeah. I mean, you don't need anything fancy to stock
fishing
up.
Pole, right?
Stock up on a ton of bluegill or brim, a cane pole or a simple spinning rod, a hook and some bread down here. That's all you really need.
Yeah.
Fill a freezer full of those. But, if you want to get into the bass fishing, you might have to get out on the lake a little further. You walk a lot of the edges of our lakes down here, even the public lakes, and do really well from the shore.
Yeah.
But I would suggest, start off, with live bait if you haven't fished artificial, shiners for bass, minnows even, but for the bluegill, worms, crickets. And like I said, bread, a little bowl of bread will do the trick for those too.
Yeah.
When you get a little more advanced, mostly I use a lot of worm down here. We've got a decent amount of vegetation, submerged vegetation, lily pads. Thankfully, we don't have hydrilla in our lake because it can just take over. I mean, I like hydrilla to a degree, but it's hard to manage it.
Yeah.
I'm throwing weedless a lot, and I'm throwing plastics, so soft plastics. Even my swim baits are soft plastic, weedlessly rigged. I'll throw when I've caught a slew of small fish, I'll want to try to catch something bigger. I'll throw on a big 7-8 inch swim bait and throw that around. Those are pretty simple. That you're throwing out there and just reeling it back into the boat. And you get bit. I take kids out on it. We take our youth group out there on our lake every year.
Nice.
These kids have never caught fish in their life. And I'll just throw shiners on and troll those around. Or I have brush piles out there and we'll throw worms on them and I'll just run them back and forth over the brush pile and they get bit. And so I would say that if you're going to do live bait for bigger fish like bass, I would say use circle hooks. You don't have to worry so much about setting the hook. Which is kind of a skill in itself.
Yeah.
you just kind of reel down and apply some pressure, and it usually hooks them pretty well.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I do with my youth group. Just use circle hooks. And I just say, don't set the hook and just reel. And
let them hook themselves. Yeah. Yeah. We do a lot of bank fishing here. I don't have a boat, but we have some ponds we fish. Actually have some small rivers we fish up here too. Do you ever do any river fishing?
I do. Yeah. I mean, we go up to North Carolina about every, just about every year. We go up to the Murphy area, Andrews, which is on the Nantahala, and I do fly fishing up there.
Yeah, great. Yeah, we catch a lot of. There's trout fishing here, and there's some a lot of catfish in the rivers and stuff too. And of course, I like catching carp just for fun. But you know, I don't really eat those. I don't know if you eat those or not. A lot of people do.
I have the most.
Those things. From what I understand, it's the most consumed fish on the planet in most nations. But here in the United States, we don't really eat them that much.
Yeah, those things are tanks, though. I mean, especially when you catch them on the ultralight and you're trying to catch bluegill with balls, and all of a sudden you hook into a 50-pound carp or something.
Yeah, I've caught some 20-pounders around here, and they're fun. You got gar down there. I used to catch gar in Tennessee. Those are a battle, too. Those can be fun to catch. But
got gar. We've got long-nosed gar in our lake. I've seen alligator gars in other areas when I fish the Kissimmee chain and everything, but mostly long nose gar. And we get those on our lake. We get mudfish out there. I throw both of those back. I've heard of people eating the gar too, especially the bigger one, and just taking the back straps out, basically.
Yeah, I caught a needle nose gar, a long nose gar on Del Hollow Lake one time out in Tennessee. And I tried to clean that thing. I couldn't even hardly get through the armor that thing had. I don't even know how you clean one. I don't even know.
Yeah, you guys, they basically have a machete in it.
Yeah.
And they're skinning it that way and then pulling it back with pliers and then
it was almost impossible to get through with a knife. Like I couldn't even hack through that armor ad. It was the scales were so thick.
Yep.
Yeah. I just couldn't get into it. Yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah. So that's a whole nother thing. Do you, when it comes to cleaning fish, I mean, you have a nice little table set up and you got the whole rig. I mean, really you don't need much more than a knife and a little bit of skill, but it does take some skill to know how to clean different fish. I mean, you clean a catfish really different than a bass or a bluegill or something like that. So, I mean, did you just grew up learning that stuff, or is that something you kind of had to just experiment with? Or
I just grew up with it when I was younger. Yeah. Dad, my brother and I both at a certain age, he said, "Hey, it's time for you to start cleaning the fish." And so that's how we learned. I mean, he stood there and showed us how to do it. And here at the house, I don't have anything fancy. I just have a really large cutting board and I do it in the kitchen.
Yeah.
My wife doesn't mind too much because I clean up really well.
Yeah, we always had a nice little table outside and some hose, you know, clean everything off, get your bucket out, because that makes good, you know, and your leftovers are good for composting for the garden and things like that. So it's a really good garden material too, what you got left. So
yeah.
Now, do you do anything other than just freeze the fish, or do you smoke them, or do you do anything special like that when you're preserving?
Not for preserving, we mostly just freeze it so far. I mean, we smoke fish, and we love to make smoked fish dip. You know, we'll go over and catch a bunch of mullet or something like that on the coast, because we're only in 45 minutes to an hour to each coast. Here, so we do a decent amount of saltwater fishing also. And so I'll smoke some of that. I'll smoke some of the catfish and make fish dip out of it. We love that. So.
Yeah. I know a lot of people who can fish. I mean, they'll can it. They'll, you know, like I said, smoke it. I mean, there's a few ways to preserve it. But if you got the freezer space and that's what you like, yeah, it's the easiest thing to do by far.
Mostly I vacuum seal. And so I will take out just enough for our family. We're a family of five. So I'll take out just the right amount of fillets for that. And I'll freeze it in individual packs like that. And I will vacuum seal them. They stay really fresh that way. I grew up, my dad always just would fill up the bag full of water and put a little lemon juice in there. And he would freeze it. And then you have this giant block you have to thaw out. And I got tired of doing that. I really like the vacuum seal and having individual packages with just what we need for dinner type thing.
Vacation alert from the 3-row Jeep Grand Cherokee L. Mama and Papa want to go hiking. Los abuelos want to relax at the beach. And the kids want to go to the amusement park. With seating for up to 7, you and your loved ones can enjoy all these adventures and more. Jeep. There's only one. Visit Jeep.com to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, that seems to be the most convenient thing too. I do the same thing with like rabbit and quail. Like I'll put four or five quail in, you know, after I've cleaned them and put them in a bag and done for a family meal, and you know, do it that way. It's a lot easier
when you exactly how we do with our rabbits also. Those out.
That's what my video here. I mean that's a good way to do it. And then like I said, you just it's convenient. Pull it out, open the bag. Do your cooking, whatever you got to do. Is there some favorite ways you like to cook and prepare it? I mean, different fish, I'm sure, for different ways.
Sure. Yeah. Leah does, that's my wife. She does most of the cooking. I do most of the grilling, but I will fry also. We love fried fish. We don't cook that as much because she's cooking it most of the time and she wants to be a little healthier. So, my favorite ways, she loves to do them, bake them in a pan with, I don't know, I can find you the recipe, but Italian tomatoes. And that's really, really good. But I have a friend, he was a teacher of mine when I was in high school, and he's now a missionary in Nicaragua. And he comes out and fishes with me when he's on furlough or if he's in town for a conference or something like that. And so we go fishing a lot. And one year I had just this bumper crop of jalapenos. And I said, you want to take some of these jalapenos home? He's like, sure, I'll take some. He's like, but you need to make jalapeno chicken. That's what we make down in Nicaragua. And I was like, well, send me the recipe. And it's awesome. It's this cream sauce with jalapenos in it. I can get you that recipe.
Wow. Too. Yeah. Send it along. That sounds great. But I got a lot of jalapenos out here.
Yeah, Leah had the idea. She's like, let's start cooking the fish that way. And that's probably my favorite way. We bake it in this jalapeno cream sauce that we make with our jalapenos that we grow. And it's
man, that sounds great. Yeah, for sure.
Not just enough kick. It's not too spicy and it's nice.
Do you ever do like just catfish on the grill or anything like that?
Yeah,
that's a good catfish one. I mean, simple and salt and pepper and a little grill. And yeah, it's pretty simple, but it tastes great. I like that. Yep.
We do primitive camping over in the Canaveral National Seashore. We do that almost every year. And when we go over there, there's tons. That's the redfish capital of the world. And so we would go out, catch fresh redfish and fillet them and leave the skin on the back. It's and just grill those right over the fire.
Yeah.
And just some Old Bay seasoning or some of the Cajun seasonings and some butter. And it's hard to beat that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like simple. I like simple. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. That sounds, now I'm getting hungry. It's almost lunchtime. yeah. I mean, fishing, I've always, you know, I don't think of it a lot because it's just something I do. We do it all the time. And, you know, when I'm talking about putting food in the freezer, I'm thinking about hunting. I'm thinking it was big, you know, I'm thinking about things that give you this bulk food all at once, but yeah, I mean, fishing throughout the year, it's amazing how much food you put up and how much you can supply for your homestead doing that. And even if you're not, you know, graced with a lake in your backyard or a river or something running through your backyard, there's a lot of places you can find fish. There's a lot of public lakes, public rivers and things you can go. I don't know what you got down here, but I know here in Indiana, we got them all over the place.
Yeah.
And we can just go where there's campgrounds that have lakes and you can fish at. So it's really not that hard to find places to fish, but one of the issues, and I don't know what you guys run into down there, maybe it's cleaner down there, but here there's so much field runoff that there's been a lot of testing done, and they've actually discovered there's a lot of chemicals in a lot of the rivers and lakes that they're actually advising you not to eat the fish out of some of those places. And do you have any of that kind of going on down there?
I heard you talking about that the other day, and I haven't heard of it here. I'm sure there are certain areas. Especially when you get down into South Florida near Okeechobee, Clewiston area, where there's a big agricultural thing going on. They're fertilizing constantly. the cane fields down there, and all. I'm sure there would probably be some issues with that. A lot of nitrates in the water. They have water processing, or not water processing, water treatment areas, where it's basically just these big fields of water, ditches of water with hydrilla, just loaded with hydrilla, and that treats it before it goes out into the Gulf. And so I'm sure in some of those, I have not heard about it in here, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I just ran across some, I think I was on the DNR's website here in Indiana one time and ran across some documentation on them, lakes and rivers that were advised not to eat out of. And I was just surprised because there's a lot of them that I have eaten fish out of. And I was like, wow, that's horrible. You know, that we know that that's such a big problem, but yet really nothing's being done to really mitigate that. You know, it just continues to be a problem ongoing, you know, because we got to grow that grain. We got to grow, you know, our corn and our wheat and all of our stuff. And we got to spray it because we can't, you know, it's just kind of heartbreaking really to know that they're doing that to the waterways.
Yep. Yeah. And the soil. I mean, I think the soil.
Yeah. And the soil, and it's horrible. The problem that's persisting with that, which is why I'm just such a fan of promoting homesteading, because the more we're growing our own, the more we're, you know, cleansing our land by doing it proper. I like to use the word redeeming the land, you know, we're bringing it back to where it should be. I mean, we're helping to mitigate that some, but boy, it's such a big problem, and it's just going to take a lot of people getting on board with that. But I think it's something you have to be aware of before you just maybe up and think, well, I'm going to go fill my freezer with the fish out of this lake or this river. You might want to look into that wherever you live, because it could be a problem.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. And I know, I mean, I don't spend as much time. I used to fish the Kissimmee chain all the time because I fished bass tournaments for a long, long time. And the amount of, I haven't heard that it's a problem, but the amount of spray that they do for the hydrilla out there, I can't imagine it's good for you. I mean, yeah. I think that's basically Roundup out there that they're spraying out.
Yeah, that's.
So I don't know that for sure. Don't hold that, but.
Yeah. Who knows what they're spraying? Yeah. It seems like a lot of thought sometimes isn't putting into what they spray. They just care about the results, and yeah, that's heartbreaking. But but then again, people have been convinced that it doesn't hurt you. Just keep on putting it in there, and maybe a little doesn't. But when it's, you know, every year for years and years, it becomes a real problem. You know,
yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't either. But then I even think about that with like hunting. I do a lot of hunting, and I do a lot of deer hunting, squirrel hunting, things like that. And I'm thinking, you know, I look at all these corn plots around here, and them deer are eating all that corn with all that spray on it and everything else. And you're eating the deer thinking you're getting a really clean meat, but who knows, you know, just because it's a wild game doesn't mean it hasn't been fed with that stuff.
Absolutely. Yes.
I think about that as well. So, yep. But we can't, I don't think you can let yourself be completely just spend all your time worrying about every single thing like that, because you just, the stress would kill you if the diet didn't. So you have to kind of just accept it and try to mitigate it as much as you can and go with that.
Yes. Sorry. Did you lose me for a second?
You kind of locked up there for a second. No big deal. You're working now. But you warned me about your low signal there out in the boonies. That's the only good thing about having an urban homestead, is I got access to the high speed internet and all that. So doesn't eliminate all my problems though.
Yeah, we keep hoping it comes around. There's some people built two lots from us, and we saw them running some cable. We don't know what it is, but we've called all the cable companies and said, "Hey, did y'all run that out there? Could you bring it just a couple, you know, another 100 yards or whatever?" But everybody we've called has said, no, I don't think that's us. So
I'll tell you what, we do a lot of camping, and we got access to this thing called Nomad Internet. Have you heard of that? And it pretty much works. It's for like camping or just rural areas, and it runs through cell phone signals, but it's true high speed internet, unlimited high speed internet. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's I don't know. I mean, like, so we haven't used it much, but I mean, you can watch movies with it and everything else, and nothing ever gives in. So I don't know if that's something maybe in areas like that. It's kind of expensive, but I've become a little bit addicted to high speed internet for certain things.
Absolutely. Us too. I mean, that's, we tried the, Starlink. We tried that.
Yeah. Didn't work.
We could never find a signal with it.
Oh, and, wow.
We have some friends that live, you know, maybe 15 minutes down the road. It works great for them, but it never.
But you get strong cell phone signals where you're at?
We had to switch to Verizon, and we have a tower across the lake over there. And so we get really good signal there, but absolutely no other service provider works.
Wow. Yeah, you do live out there a little ways, don't you? That's good, though. It's good in a lot of ways. In some ways, it's not, I guess. There are challenges to being, you know, rural and having a homestead off, you know, kind of away from things a little bit. I mean, there are those challenges, but definitely probably worth it. I'm sure you trade that for what you got, for sure.
There's some inconveniences, but they pale in comparison to the benefits of being a little further away from.
Yeah, absolutely.
By mostly cow pastures, orange fields, and blueberry fields. So I like that.
I used to haul out of the, you know, back in when I was trucking back in the down south years and years ago. I used to run oranges out of those orange fields down there, and yeah, that was pretty nice area. It's a really beautiful area. Now you're dealing with a lot of sandy soil, aren't you?
So we're almost exclusively sugar sand out here.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I remember that.
So great drainage where we're at, but this used to be, I don't know, in the 60s or something. It used to be all orange field where we're at. And I don't know when it was cleared, but our soil was pretty zapped. A lot of amending the soil and for our beds and our raised beds. But it's white.
It's white. So that's pretty much how you fixed it. You just raised beds and brought in your own soil, or?
No, I've used our soil on a lot of it, and I've just added a lot of compost. Now I say we get a fairly dark gray sand
in those areas. But it grows things pretty well then, huh?
Yeah. But some of the areas will bring in topsoil and then add that to that compost. Oh, nice. And those for our raised beds, but for our big garden, it's just, I've just added a lot of compost from the rabbits, the chickens, from all of our scraps and everything. We keep all those in a compost.
Yeah, it's definitely a little more work to fix the situation down there. But if you can, you got that benefit of the year-round temps that really can, you know, open up a lot of opportunity for growing food year-round if you can get that soil fixed. And I know that is something a lot of people, permaculture, there's a lot of people down there practicing permaculture. And I know that's something they really, with the chop and drop, and then just the way they, you know, you're continuing to just change that soil. And it's something that I think works really well, really well down there.
Yeah. My guavas love it. I mean, we do. And the guavas are going right now. They also love the heat. We're just coming out of them. I'll be making guava jam hopefully tomorrow or the next day with my daughter. Mm-hmm. And the bananas don't mind it.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. You're sticking to native things that grow well down there. You're probably not growing apples or something. Yeah. So yeah, things like that, because that becomes a whole new problem, you know.
I tried Florida peaches and they didn't like our soil.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
But yeah, there are certain things, the more tropical fruits and all, they do fine. And we get a lot of mangoes, tons of mangoes, tons of avocados. Those go really well.
All the things I love and I can't grow. Yeah. Yeah. It's just it though. You know, you can grow out of your zone a little bit, but it takes so much work. You got to really consider if it's worth it or not. You know, it's like, sometimes it's just really easy to stick what grows well there and just learn to enjoy it, make the most of it. But you can create microclimates and change your soil, do all kinds of things. And it's fun to do that, maybe on a small scale in a small area or something. But if you're really wanting heavy production and you're doing it for the food and you know, want the best crop you can get, yeah, you're best to stick with things that grow well in your area for sure.
Yeah. I've wanted to try to do some of the inside growing like you do with the lamps and the beans and everything. And maybe when one of the kids goes to college or whatever, I'll take one of those rooms and do that with it. But right,
it'd almost be just for fun for you, though, because like I said, you can grow most of the year, so you don't really need to.
It's true.
But it is fun. I mean, I love growing stuff inside. I like just the challenge of trying to grow anything anywhere. I'm still thinking about trying to grow like a lemon tree or a banana tree or something on my property somewhere. You know, I mean, people do it. It just takes a lot of, you know, finessing and working with it, but it's fun to, absolutely, for an experiment to try to do, but I don't know who's got time for that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I remember you talking all the time about getting depressed during the winter time and everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's the opposite here. It gets depressing and down here when it's 100 plus degrees the summertime.
You want to just sit in the house and not go outside in that, don't you?
The winter time is what we all look forward to because it's like spring for all the rest of the time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, here it's like, me and Rachel was just talking this on the podcast we recorded yesterday. It's like, you know, I remember the first year I got a greenhouse, I heated that thing all winter long. I mean, it was like 0 degrees outside and I was keeping it about 60 in there, you know, and it was really expensive, but I was just surrounded by all this green, you know, and I'm out there picking cherry tomatoes and cutting lettuce in my greenhouse in January. And, you know, and it was a foot of snow on the ground around me, which was kind of fun.
I remember you talking about that on your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good times, but yeah, I don't do that anymore because it's pretty expensive heating out in the greenhouse when it's that cold because they don't have any insulation.
yeah
so well sounds like so is that your primary method? Well, you say you're raising cows, so you're obviously putting a lot of meat in the freezer there too, probably. But would you say that it's a significant portion of the food that you're supplying your homestead with? It would be fish.
It is, yes. Like you've already said, we've just got such a great resource down here for it.
Yeah.
With being so close to the coast, you like saltwater fish and you like freshwater fish. I mean, we're just surrounded by it. So,
yeah,
we get a significant amount of our food from that.
Yeah. And it ain't for everybody. Like you say, if you live in an area where it isn't easy to do, maybe it's not something that you think about supplying your homestead with. And maybe it ain't a really viable option or something that's going to, you can provide a lot of meat for your homestead with, but I think a lot of people could, and it's something maybe we don't talk about enough because I know like up in like Alaska and stuff like that, that's like significant, you know, the way they supply food for their homesteads and evidently Florida too. I mean, I guess I hadn't thought about it down there about how many, it's probably pretty common down there for a lot of people to put a lot of fish in their freezers.
It is. Yes.
And you know, it is here too, but probably not as much as there. I mean, I grew up and we always had a lot of fish in the freezer and it's just something, I guess it is one of them things. I always thought of it more as recreation and enjoying it occasionally than I thought about it as a actual source of food, you know, that you were living on. And it is though, and it absolutely can be. So I think it's a good point.
I think until I started listening to your podcast, I kind of saw most of things like that with hunting and all. It was mostly recreational. We ate what we shot and everything, but it wasn't this cultivating a lifestyle of eating trying to grow and hunt what you're consuming. And so that's where by listening to your podcast, that's where it kind of shifted for me. It was mostly sport fishing. We grew up always eating fish, snook, redfish, trout, bass, crappie, everything. I mean, my dad always did that, but it was never this could be a lifestyle
and
really change how you eat. But now that's how it is.
Yeah, it's something like I said, I grew up not even thinking about hunting. Like you said, we go deer hunting. It was just a fun thing. And you ate it, but I didn't, you know, we'd eat squirrel. I love squirrel hunting. Was like something it was like when I was a kid, that was like the thing for me. I loved it more than deer hunting because it's just all that action, you know. Deer hunting when you're a kid ain't that much fun. You just sit in a stand for hours and hours and hours and may or may not see anything. But, you know, squirrel hunting was a lot of action, you know. You got out there and you got busy shooting squirrel and a rabbit, same way. You know, we go rabbit hunting and things. And it was just fun. And yeah, we ate it. We cleaned them. We ate them. But yeah, I didn't think about it as a meat source for our family, you know, until I kind of got on the mindset of homesteading. And it's like, wow, we put a lot of meat in our freezer doing these things and fishing too, you know, and just don't think about it. But once you get in that mindset, everything you're putting in that refrigerator, that freezer, or in a canning jar or smoking or dehydrating or whatever, everything you do, you're thinking food source, you know, and you're thinking that's something I don't have to go to the store and purchase now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've shifted from being a game fisherman to I'm much more interested in how many 1 to 2 pounders I can catch out on our lake. I mean, don't get me wrong, when I catch I'm excited about it, and I'm going to take a lot of pictures. But I'm out there more to see what we can do to stock in the freezer and supplement.
You know what? If you can homestead and supply your food, but also have fun doing it. Like, I love gardening. You know, I love raising animals. I love hunting and fishing. If you love doing these things, it just makes that lifestyle a lot much better. I mean, if it's just like, oh, you know, the drudgery of putting food in the freezer, well, then you might as well just work a job and buy the stuff. You know what I mean? But it just pay for everything up front. I mean, you could just pay the farmer to raise it for you and get it yourself. But when you love it, it just makes it all worth it, you know. And you love fishing, you love catching them big ones, you know, that you got to throw back occasionally, and that's great, you know. And I love deer hunting, and I'll shoot a doe and put it in the freezer. But you know, if I see a 16 point buck walk up on me, I'm gonna get really excited. You know what I mean? Even though the meat part, get the shakes from it. You know, you're gonna get pretty excited. So it's like, yeah, there's some fun in it. You know, there's some excitement, and there's a joy in going above and beyond maybe what you have to have to get that something extra. But yeah, I mean, enjoy it. I think that's great that you're having fun fishing for those trophies too. You know, I think that's great.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by AutoTrader. Credit scores, down payments, interest rates. Car buying can be a numbers game, but you don't have to be a math expert to get the keys to your dream car. Just use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. You can crunch the numbers so you know exactly how much you'll pay each month for your car. So leave the calculator at home. Visit AutoTrader.com to learn more.
Well, and here, like you said, even with the gardening, I mean, it's year round. We can fish year round. There's mm-hmm. certainly there's seasons on certain things, snapper, grouper, snook, but most of our fish, bass and all, you've got the same limits all year mm-hmm. long. It's not. I love to duck hunt, but I don't. That's 2.5 months out of the year that I get a duck hunt. I'll stock the freezer with duck that we'll eat on all year long. To the next season, but to be able to go out and do it any month in the year and still provide for your homestead, I think is something that's unique versus hunting.
For sure. Yeah. Well, we could fish year round too. We just have to have an auger to cut through the ice to do it. I don't do any of that. I'm not into that. But there's a lot of people around here that do. I mean, they look forward to the ice fishing, and I think it's fun, you know, and especially if you go up north, you got Minnesota, Wisconsin, those areas, that's a major part of their lifestyle up there. And I think it provides for their homestead, you know, in the winter months as well. So I think it's a big part of what they do as well. So yeah, I think it's great that you can get out there and continue to provide. And you got the blessing of living in Florida, like you said, where you can do it year round. So you may not even have to put as much in an actual freezer and store because you can continue to go out and get it fresh.
Yeah.
So you don't have to keep, you know, hundreds of pounds on stock at all times because you can just continue to provide, which is great. And the garden as well. And here we have to be thinking a lot more about preserving, you know, even the garden, the hunting, the fishing, everything. We have to think about preserving, you know, and putting it up where, yeah, if you can keep it on hoof, keep it in the lake and keep it in the garden bed, that's a lot less work. Just eat it fresh, for sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll stock up in the freezer, you know, I don't know, a month's worth or whatever. And then we go back out and stock it up again. And in between, we just throw everything back. Of course, it's always better when it's fresh and it hasn't been frozen at all. I have a friend that says life's too short to eat frozen fish.
I don't mind it. Well, of course, I don't know. I mean, we eat a lot of fresh, but I guess
he's a fishmonger too, so he can get fresh fish whenever he wants to. So
okay, yeah.
He's distributing it at the markets and everything, so no problem for him.
I guess if you're privileged enough, yeah, you can live that way.
But vacuum sealing them, the freshwater, the saltwater fish too, vacuum seal it really well and throw it in the freezer. I mean, you can hardly tell the difference.
Yeah, I've never once did any saltwater fishing, so I don't. That's something is totally out of my realm. I don't know anything about it.
We got to get you down here.
I'm actually going to be down there next month for about 3 days, but going down to Fort Lauderdale. Me and my wife are going down to Fort Lauderdale for a couple of days. Yeah, but I'm not going to do any fishing. We're just going to hang out.
Oh, it's great fishing down there in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I hear. I mean, a lot of people go down there just for that. You know, they'll make a special trip and spend a week fishing and come back home. You know, I don't know what the rules are taking or fishing out of state like that, but seems complicated.
Just gotta get an out of state fishing license, and you mm-hmm. can do it. But down there now, it's warm enough year round that they're getting peacock bass and the cichlids and all kinds of crazy things, tropical fish that have been released down there.
Wow!
But
that's a whole new world to me. I don't know nothing about that, but it sounds fun. I mean, it sounds like I watched on YouTube. I watch these guys catching these monsters out there on the ocean and stuff, and I'm like, that's amazing. You know, to catch a fish that big, I don't even know what I would do. Just to see some of them bass you're catching, I don't know what I'd do with something like that. That'd be just amazing. I think the biggest bass I've ever caught is maybe a 6-pounder. I mean, I can't imagine what you're catching down there.
Well, we don't catch big ones every time we're out, but, you know, it's funny. I mean, you'll catch 30, 40 small ones, and then you hook into one that feels like it's not going to come off the bottom or that you're stuck on something. Then it starts running and you're like, that's not a 1-pounder. That's a bigger fish.
Yeah. That's kind of like the carp fishing up here, I guess. We catch those 25-pound carp.
Yeah. And that's when you start getting those shakes that you were talking about with the
with deer.
Whatever. My son said, when I pulled that 11.7 in, and finally landed it, he was like, you didn't look like you were having fun at all. And I was like, I wasn't fun at all. I was so nervous it was going to come off. Yeah. Keep jumping. Don't come off.
Yeah, I've been there. I actually shot at a buck one time twice, missed it twice because I was shaking. It jumped about 10 feet, stopped again. I went with a bow, not a gun. And I was bow hunting, shot at it again, missed it again, and it ran off. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I just made two bad shots on the same deer. How does that happen? But I was just so nervous. You know, your hands are shaking because it's such a monster deer, you know.
Absolutely, especially with bow hunting.
Oh yeah, I like bow hunting because I like the challenge of it and stuff. And I just, you know, gun. I mean, I'll go out with a gun the first time just to fill the freezer, but then I love the sport of going out with a bow and doing some bow hunting.
I haven't done any real bow hunting. I've got lots of friends that do, but we do bow fishing a lot. I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
We've got lots of big tilapia in our lakes around here and in our lake also, and so we've got a reel on our bows, and you know, mm-hmm. cheap bows that you can get at the pawn shop or something, nothing special, 55-pound type thing, and you just go out there and clean up on it's a lot of fun.
They do it here too, but it's mostly just sport and it's mostly just carp people do it with around here. Yeah, they do, you know, it's I mean, I've done it once with some carp and it was fun. It is a good time, but yeah, you're not. Again, if you're eating that, if you're shooting something, you're eating, but you can eat carp. Like I said, we grew up fishing for carp and we always put them back. I don't know. I just something we never cleaned and ate. I guess there's a trick to cleaning them to make them, you know, because they got a mud vein and things like that in them. But a lot of people do and a lot of people eat them. And it's probably something I need to learn how to do and try because we do catch a lot of carp and it seems like a lot of meat getting wasted. And if you knew how to clean them properly and eat them and cook them right, I hear they're good when they're done right.
Well, that's how it was when I grew up with tilapia. That was a trash fish and we didn't eat them. You know, if we caught them or we shot them, we gave them to somebody else and they ate them.
Wow. And we're buying them in the market up here.
Now they're in every 5-star restaurant that you go around.
Yeah. And it's the preferred fish for aquaponics. Everybody's raising them in their aquaponics, you know, for me.
Yeah. They're delicious. Well, I love them. Once I finally tried one, I was like, this is not a trash fish at all. This is great.
Yeah, it's amazing how you get a mindset about something because the way you're raised or whatever, and then you find out, wow, that was amazing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, that's good information, you know. I think I'd encourage a lot of people to get started. If you're not a fisherman or you know, maybe you've just never thought of something you enjoy, try it. Go out with somebody who is a fisherman. Let them kind of show you the ropes. You know, get you just a basic reel. I mean, you're probably an open-faced reel guy, you know, big reels and things like that. You know, I'm a close face reel. You know, we do it the easy way now up here. I mean, I do. And, you know, you get something simple that you can use, get out there and, sticking a string and a hook, you could catch something, but you know, if you had to, but do the easiest thing you can do, go out with somebody maybe that knows what they're doing, do a little bank fishing or go out on a boat with somebody and let them show you a few things. Because I think once you catch a few fish, you're hooked, so to speak. I'll just throw that in there. I think you get hooked on fishing. And it's a lot of fun. And if you enjoy eating fish, yeah, there's, you know, I think it's a good way to supply for your homestead. But yeah, give it a try. If somebody's new to it, give it a try. You know, I think it's something worth doing.
I mean, there's nothing cheaper than a cane pole and bread and a hook.
And like we said in the beginning, panfish are the best eating. I mean, you go out and catch a bunch of bluegill off the bank, and that's some great eating right there. Love them.
One of the easiest things you can do, and it's the cheapest way that you can fish, and you can load up on a ton of fish.
You can literally be into it for about $10 total or something, or go out there and catch a bunch of fish. Yeah, I mean, it's not expensive, but you can even get a cheap, you know, decent fishing pole, reel and everything for a really good price. You can go to Walmart and buy something, you know, and you don't have to get fancy. That's what I'm getting at. It doesn't have to be something fancy. You don't have to go all out and have all the toys, and you can definitely put a lot of fish in the freezer, you know, and try it, because I think it's a good way. Maybe there's a lot of people out there who have just been sport fishermen, you know, and they haven't really thought about that. Like you said, you didn't think about it as a means of actually providing for your homestead until you really changed that, got into that homesteading mindset. So maybe someone after listening to this thinking, I love to fish. I mean, I just never thought out of it as being a way to put a lot of food in the freezer, you know, and it can be for sure.
Well, and that shifts with that paradigm shift, that becomes the exciting part. It's not so much, I'm just going, I'm disappointed if I don't catch something bigger than a pounder or a bunch of bluegills. Now I'm excited when I catch a bunch of bluegills.
One pounders,
and so
it actually adds a layer of satisfaction to even going out there and fishing that you didn't have before, for sure. It even makes it a better time because you're pleased with what you're getting, no matter what it is. So, well, that's good stuff. And I guess if you don't have anything to add, we'll close up there and tell these fine folks goodbye. Yeah, I think it was great information. I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about it. Like I said, it's a big part of what you're doing, and I'm going to make it a bigger part of what I'm doing. Like I said, we enjoy it. My grandson loves fishing, and you know what? I think it'd be a good lesson for him to learn that, you know what, this ain't just for fun. We can, you know, this is something we can provide for our families with, you know, and actually put some food on the table. And I think it's a lesson he needs to learn. Yeah, my granddaughter as well. And she's just getting into it. She's a little younger. But I think it's good to raise our kids to think beyond just the sport of it and to think of it as provision and, you know, enjoy it for what it is and being more than just fun. So it's good stuff. Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking to me about
it. Appreciate you having me on.